Hello and welcome to Behind the Journey. And today I'm speaking to Mitch Clayton, who's a founder of Flowed. And we're talking about all things business. So Mitch, first and foremost, I don't want to try and spoil your intro here or drop something out that you should have in. So do you want to give the audience a kind of a quick spiel about who you are and what you do?
Yeah. So first of all, thanks for having me in Dubai. Had a great couple of days. So thanks for the invite. My name's Mitch Clayton. I'm the founder of Flowed, 27 years old. Multi-million pound marketing agency. We're only 2 years old. Doing quite big things. So looking forward to sharing a little bit more about the journey today.
I think the wild thing with you, Mitch, is that I've seen so many of your posts go viral on LinkedIn. We've worked together.
Yeah.
And you know, we've been kind of just chilling, just relaxing. And then all of a sudden on Instagram, I got this DM saying like, Pete, I'm coming to Dubai. So before we go into anything about the business journey, I just want to know straight up, why are you in Dubai?
So this is my first time I've ever been to Dubai, which I feel like is crazy just because I see so many people coming here. I've got so many friends out here. And you know, there's so much opportunity in Dubai at the moment. I've been here 3 days. I love the culture. I've probably met more people in 3 days here than I have in 3 months living in Manchester, which is where I originally come from. So, you know, interesting to explore business opportunities. Also just life in general is quite nice here. I've definitely got something to think about when I go back home now. So, it's been a nice couple of days and, you know, going back to Manchester tomorrow, maybe I might stay for a few more days.
I think the mad thing with Dubai for me is, you know, you sit in the UK, you work really hard. You know, I built my business, you know, kind of for 10 years ago now. You sweat it out, you're putting in the crazy, crazy hours, and you realize actually when it comes to weekends or what you want to do, you kind of just fall flat, right? There's nothing else to do. You're in a small city, small town. The moment you step into Dubai, you kind of realize how big the world is. Yeah. And I think that's what the thing from kind of watching how you've reacted to certain things in Dubai, for me, it's been the case of you being kind of like, there's a lot more out here than Manchester. And that's kind of how I reacted at first.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I come from a small town called Preston, which isn't even in Manchester. So, you know, Manchester, where I'm originally from, is like, you know, a whole different world from some of the people who I grew up with. So I think as you grow as a person, you know, and especially my mentality, as I'm always trying to level up. So, you know, it's a great place. Like I said, I've only been here 3 days, but no, enjoying it.
I think I'm Dubai's number one tour guide and also influencer, and people are going to keep coming. But I don't want to talk about too much. I think we've got some really interesting things to discuss about your journey and what you've been through. Having spoke to you a few times now, I think kind of your whole journey of how you got to this point right now, sitting here in Dubai, is pretty amazing. You were a professional football player.
Yeah.
You've had a business before, you exited that business, and now you're kind of building probably one of the most exciting, you know, email marketing agencies in the UK, especially. So let's rewind, right? Let's go right back to Mitch at school, right? Yeah. Let's go back to those early days. That's Mitch the football player, right? Yeah. So wherever you want to start that journey from, you crack on and let's go from there.
Yeah, so wow. The Mitch you see now is a completely different person to who I was. I've worked on myself so much to even get to this point. I got kicked out of school at 15, no GCSEs. I was a very uneducated young man. I had an ego bigger than this room. And that's one thing which I've taken so much learnings from. And now I'd like to think I'm a very humble person. But to go back to the early days. So I played professional academy football from basically 8 years old, which is, you know, that's where the best football players when they're young, get scouted from the big teams like Manchester United, Bolton, Blackburn, whatever the Premier League clubs at the time. And I was basically in the academy system from like eight years old. So when kids at 8 years old was, you know, going home, doing the homework, I was going playing football. I always had like a really set, rigid routine. And I was in the academy system from 8 to 16. So basically 8 years of every Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, you've got to go here on this certain time, take your shin pads, take your boots, make sure you're on time. Even like those disciplines that you get taught at such a young age has actually helped me quite a lot now. Because again, like how many 8 year olds are going to somewhere on a certain time and are taking their equipment with them? It's just those discipline traits, what it taught me from quite an early age. But what it also gave me is it gave me a huge ego because I thought I was better than everyone else. I got to leave school early on certain days because if I'm out of training or a football game, I basically got like a green pass. So what that gave me is like, it gave me a bit of an ego to say, look, I'm better than you guys. You know, I can go, I can leave school early. You know, you can't do that. And that like stayed with me, for quite a few years. As I got older, so I was, 18, 19 playing for, I got a scholarship at Blackpool, which is where I was in and around the first team, you know, with players who were earning, you know, multi-millions, you know, big personalities. And then all of a sudden you're thinking, okay, I'm going to be the guy. This is me. I'm set for life. And then I got released. I got released when I was 18, 19, and really struggled to make my way back to like it's when you come out of football, it's really difficult to get back in. You can get in just as quickly as you can go out. And that is like, you know, so cliche. You hear those great stories of people like playing for the Sunday league team and a football scout from whoever it is, watch them be like, okay. And then the next day they're playing for a Prem team or something like that. It can work like that on the other end as well. So, you know, you can be in the game for 10 years to 15 years, and then you can be out of contract. And then, you know, you're finding it difficult and you need money. You know, you need to survive. You know, I was 19. I've got a dad that wouldn't give me 2 weeks without earning money. So he was like, you know, you got to go. If you're not going to be a footballer, I know a bricklayer who will take you on as an apprentice. And that's basically what I did. So I left football at 19. To be honest, by the time I've actually left football, I was actually quite relieved. It was just so intense from such an early age. And that was probably one of the reasons why I don't think I made it. I genuinely believe that when you're a kid playing football, it needs to be relaxed. You need to want to do it for yourself. And because I'd been in this like intense academy environment since I could walk, you know, by the time I was coming out again, I was almost like a little bit relieved. I just wanted to go and be a normal guy and just play with my friends.
I think the whole footballing system is kind of, especially the academy system is kind of on its ass. I mean, you know, back in the day, one of my first marketing jobs was in football scouting, and the amount of players you see who are really, really talented have never been seen, or on the flip side, the ones who went through the whole, you know, academy system and then got released like on their 18th birthday for no real reason because they didn't quite make it. And you've got all of these young players who build their whole life thinking they're going to make it to be let down right at the end. And most of the time, let's be real, very similar to your situation, they've got no qualifications to back them up, they've got no other career lined up, and they're pretty much falling down the wayside. And there's no sort of structure where these clubs are supporting players to move on past that point. So I think what you're talking about there is hugely common, right? Mm. Really, really common in the footballing world. But I guess what happens next is really, really crucial, right? Because you can sit there and kind of, you know, try and go into one of the other academies in Spain and try and make it a second way, or you can try and break through a scouting network like we did. But the reality is, for most people, if you're released at 18, it is game over. Like, yeah, you almost have to look back and be like, now I'm a Saturday league player, I'm playing on weekends, I've now got to get a job. So let's talk about kind of how you then transition then from thinking you're going to make it to making some decent money.
Yeah. So I think for me as well, my mentality was, I'm either going to play in the Prem or I'm not going to play at all.
Yeah.
I didn't have any interest in going playing Sunday League. I just didn't love football enough to do that. I was either going to be, you know, the best in the game, or I'm just not going to do it. And that was one of the reasons why I decided to retire at 19 versus trying to continue playing football. And that was probably one of the best decisions that I made, because I've got friends now and they might love football. You know, they might love football a lot more than me, but I've got friends now. I got out at an early age and I had a chance to go and, you know, gather, you know, go and learn something new. But I see people now dropping out at maybe 26, 27, 28. It's a lot difficult then. Do you know what I mean? You might have a wife and kids, you might have a girlfriend, you might have a house. Thankfully, I was living at my parents' house. So, you know, even though I had a pretty strict dad, you know, he's not gonna throw me out on my ass just because I didn't pay rent 1 month. But after leaving football, it was probably one of the most difficult times in life. My mum and dad had just gone through a divorce as well. So the person that basically I spent a lot of time with throughout like my footballing life, who was my dad, he had now gone. So like I was now living with my mum, no footballing career, my dad's gone. And you know, I'm like, still don't really have a job. So I was basically just working whatever I could do. I must've had so many random jobs. I worked in, I was basically like a kind of like just an admin person in like a medical company. I was even a part-time school teacher. Not like a school teacher, like a, what you call it?
Assistant.
Assistant, yeah. I was a part-time assistant just to make some money. You know, and it was, you know, you just got to do what you got to do to survive sometimes. And, you know, I was just really not happy with where my life was going. I had friends that I used to play football with now becoming in the first team and stuff. And you're looking at yourself thinking, I am such a failure. You know, how can I be here? How can I be a part-time like assistant teacher when some of the people that I used to, you know, share a changing room with are now making, you know, tens, 20,000 pounds a week. And I'm, you know, it was a really low moment for me. So I tried basically running away from my fears. I booked a one-way ticket to Ibiza. And I thought, you know what? I'm 19. I don't know what's going to happen. I said to my mum, I've got a bit of news. I'm going to Ibiza next week. And she was like, what? And I was like, yeah, you know, life isn't quite working for me in the UK. So I'm just going to just go and see what happens. I took about £500 out of me. Didn't know anyone. Just met a group of people on Facebook, which is probably quite a bit dangerous. Shared like an apartment with like 8 people. And then, you know, just lived for a little bit. Now, this was probably one of the best things that I could ever do, because I've, ever since up to that point, I'd have, you know, when you're a footballer, everyone does everything for you, you know? So I was now in a place where if I wanted to eat today, I had to do it myself. If I wanted to have a nice, tidy bedroom or nice, tidy apartment, I've got to do it all myself. And it was, I was in like survival mode. And I think I actually enjoyed it, because for where I was at with my mentality, I'm not going to say I was like suicidal or anything, because I wasn't suicidal, but I just needed such a big shake up in my life. I spent 3 or 4 months in Ibiza, you know, and it just got to a point where it had done what I wanted it to do. I'd hit rock bottom in Ibiza, and now I had motivation to go and sort my life out. I remember I went and I had like €100 in my pocket. I was like, right, I'm going to go and buy a laptop, sort a CV out. This is when people actually use CVs. By the way, no one does that anymore. But went and bought a laptop, like this absolute banger of a laptop, wrote a CV out on it. And then literally for the last 2 weeks that I was in Ibiza, I was just applying for jobs back in the UK. The only thing that I was actually really, really good at was I was a really good talker. And you know, and it's one thing that ever since I was a kid, I've always been able to wiggle myself out of situations with talking, which is a great trait to have. So I was like, okay, I'm going to go and get a sales job. You know, what does someone do who has no education? You know, they've got no grades, they've got no university, but they're good at talking. You're going to go get a sales job, right? So I applied for those jobs. I somehow managed to blag my way a job at a call center. I basically didn't let the guy go until he said, yes, we'll hire you. And I even said to him in the interview, I was like, look, I'm so broke at the moment. I literally need this job. If you hire me, I will be the hardest worker in this office. And I had no qualms about, you know, laying it all out on the table and saying that. And he basically said, you got a job. And that was a changing point in my life, because now I had a job. You know, I had a bit of direction with where I was going with my career again. And I've been massively humbled, because don't forget, it was only a year ago I was a footballer. So I'm now working in a call center. And no offense to people working in a call center, but it's a little bit different of an environment to, you know, being in a Premier League football environment. And you get talking with your coworkers and they'd be like, oh, where have you come from? I've come from a Premier League football club. Why are you here then? And I got that every day. So
I think one of the things for me, and you look at it there and you've shaken up your whole life, yeah. Right? And I think even people who are doing okay, living a good life, still occasionally need to shake up, right? I mean, I see friends there, you look at them and they're in the same relationship they've been in for a long time. You can tell he's not quite happy, she's not quite happy. They've got a house together. They've got an average sort of job. They're going through the motions. And I'll never say it to them because it's not your place. But you need a shake up, bro. You need a shake up. You need to give something another go. You want to try something different, change your career, because otherwise you've got 60 years of this. I say this all the time to my mates. Like, you have, if you're in your job right now and you're not happy with it, you have 50 years of that, like 50 years. So I think I'm a huge, huge believer in regular shakeups. Me coming to Dubai was a shakeup. right? I'd been working, you know, nonstop for my company for, let's say, 10 years. We'd done pretty well. We're doing okay. And I was kind of like, well, I've either got 40 more years of this, 30 more years of this, or I shake up. My shakeup was getting on a plane, renting out my flat and moving to Dubai. And I think regular shakeups are a great way of realizing what you actually want to do.
Yeah.
So, right. So you've shaken your life up. You've got the call center. I want to fast forward a little bit quicker here. So you met your current girlfriend at the call center, right?
Yeah, at the call center. So, so what's actually quite mad is she's got such a similar, so she went, was in Ibiza at the same time as me as well. So, you know, we was both two people, very similar situations. And then we found ourselves in the same call center, which was like, did I not see you in Ibiza like 2 months ago? What are you doing here anyway? So yeah, anyway, I met my girlfriend, Ashley, who is now my co-founder of Flowed, at the call center. To cut a long story short, I got quite good at sales and then got a move to the city in Manchester, which is our closest city. And then Ash came with me and we was like, okay, let's go and try and better ourselves. At the time I was still young, I was only 21, which in the grand scheme of things is still quite young. So, you know, I had an opportunity to, you know, go and, you know, further my career. And I got a job at quite a corporate business. I'm not going to mention, but it was quite a corporate business. And that was the time when I really realized, this corporate world isn't really for me. There was a day where I came into the office. It was a really, really hot day. And normally in the majority of offices that I've been in, if it's a really, really hot day in like August or July, you know, they normally let you wear like shorts or something just to, you know, so you're more comfortable sat behind your desks. And I came in with shorts one day just thinking that this was the norm. By the way, they weren't like sports shorts. They were like trousers, like
shorts.
Yeah, like work shorts. Yeah, like, you know, pretty
good quality shorts.
Yeah. Pretty nice. Like good Zara's, you know. And my boss came over and he was like, why have you got shorts on? And I'm like, well, it's really hot. Like, and I said, oh, I've not got any client meetings today. Am I all right just to wear them today? And he was like, you're going to have to go home. And at that moment, I felt like I was like in school or something where, you know, it just doesn't really make any sense, but this is just a system and you either do it or, you know, there's going to be consequences. So I went home, changed my shorts. And whilst I was changing my shorts, I thought, I don't like this.
This ain't for me.
This is not for me. You know, if I want to wear shorts, I'm fucking going to wear my shorts. Do you know what I mean? So at that point, that's where was the moment where it clicked that I need to start doing something else here. I think that night I went on YouTube and YouTube was really my savior, I'd say. This was maybe like 5-6 years ago from now. This was a time where there was a lot of like guru YouTube creators creating content, kind of like Grant Cardone style, things like that. And like mini versions of him. Gary Vee played quite a big impact in me as well. And I think Gary Vee is like a good, if anyone is trying to develop themselves from a personal perspective, I think like old school Gary Vee content is actually quite helpful because it bridges the gap between not too businessy, but something which someone who's just working a normal job can kind of.
And I think keyword there, old school.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%. His content has changed so much recently. Yeah. And I agree because I'm of the same thought process. Kind of the right at the start of his content creation journey, the kind of development about content strategies and understanding kind of how to start a business have been pretty amazing. But it's funny you say that because one of my first companies was a YouTube channel building out how to remove car radios, which was kind of my first stepping stone. So I think a lot of people in our kind of like era, like our generation, YouTube somehow always helped them, whether it was learning a new skill or their first way of distributing content, whatever it may be. So go on, tell us about YouTube. How did it help you?
Yeah, so for me, the thing which kind of like was a thing I was interested in was drop shipping. So when I was younger, I used to basically help my mum and grandma sell stuff on the market. So, you know, I was like 8, 9, 10 or something. I've been with my mum and grandma Sunday mornings in, you know, some of the worst locations trying to make like £100 for the family or something like that. So I was like, it was like, okay, buying and selling products is, you know, something I'm quite good at. How can this be easier made, you know, by doing it online? So I must have researched this for such a long time. And don't forget, I'm really like, I really lack a lot of education at this time. So I left school at 15. So like I needed to put in so much more work than some people that might have gone to university, because technically I just wasn't, I'm not saying I wasn't switched on. I've always been switched on, but just from like an educate, a structured education perspective, I just needed a bit of work. To cut a long story short, spent a couple of years going back and forth with different, e-commerce companies. Must have created maybe like 10 different e-commerce brands at a time, you know, and like just testing and failing. And then I finally got one which did well-ish. Well, I exited it, so, you know, it did okay. Now, at this time, I'd moved on from the corporate job and I got myself a job which, because at this time I knew I'm not going to be in this corporate ladder. I was already set. I'm 100% doing something from the side. I need an easy job. I need a job that's going to pay me, that is going to require the least amount of effort. So whenever I can do, I've got that spare time to go and work on my business. Because one of the hardest things, and it's still to this day, is trying to build, a business while you're working a full-time job. Because the only times that you've got to work is either in the evenings or at night. So when you actually accumulate those hours, they're not a huge amount really. And as well, you're tired as well because you've spent time working. And as well on the weekends, you've got friends that might say, hey, come to this thing. So you've got to be so strict and disciplined with your time. And I went into absolute ghost mode at that point. What was very, very helpful for me, and even this was obviously a bad thing that happened in the world, was COVID. COVID massively benefited me. 2 months before COVID started, I started a jewelry brand. And the jewelry brand was the one that had serious legs of actually being successful. Now, 2 months into the jewelry brand, we started getting some sales and I was thinking, okay, this could actually do. I'm still working a job, but you know, there's a bit of money coming in like per month. I'm like halfway from like matching my monthly salary. I'm thinking, starting to get a bit excited. And then COVID hits and then I get put on furlough. So I was in a situation where I was basically being paid from my current employer to basically run my brand at home. And I thought to myself, this is never, ever going to happen to me ever again. This is my opportunity to change my life forever. And if I don't grab this opportunity with both hands, it's probably going to be the biggest mistake I ever make.
Do you know what the maddest thing is about the whole furlough thing? Is I remember when furlough was a big thing in the UK, You'd be on it, you'd go on Instagram and you could see who was furloughed and they'd be sunbathing in their garden. And the UK had great weather for that whole like period, yeah, it was outstanding. Amazing. Like people would be getting burnt because they were sunbathing so much at home. And I always remember, I think I said it on the podcast as well, I was like, I cannot, if you were on furlough right now and you are sitting at home and sunbathing, you should be embarrassed with yourself.
Yeah.
You should be embarrassed. Because there is no, like you said there, there's no other opportunity in your whole entire life where you're literally getting paid to sit and do nothing. Yeah. And if you couldn't get the get up and go into that mindset to do something valuable for your life, you are nothing but an idiot. Like That's just genuinely what it was. So I'm glad you weren't.
Thank you. So yeah, me and Ash had a conversation with each other. I remember it. It was almost like a bit emotional because we've been trying to change our lives for like the last 12 months, 24 months. Whilst working jobs and we knew how difficult it was. And like I said, it was at the start was one of the hardest things, but we said, look, if we look at ourselves at the end of this furlough period and say, look, we've given it absolutely everything. We've worked day and night and, you know, we can't have any, you know, we can't have any regrets. We come to the end of the furlough. We're not just making our salaries. We're making triple our salaries. So when the call come from my manager to say, hey, Mitch, good news. We're all going back to the office. I was like, thanks, but no thanks. Now that 3 months felt like 12 months because day and night, and don't forget, I wasn't like I don't have a marketing degree. So everything I was doing was just self-taught. How I actually made it happen from a financial perspective, I took a huge risk. I got an Amex card. Now I started the business with no money whatsoever. The only money I ever had to invest in the business was like £300 or £400 per month that I basically just saved on top of my wage after all my bills had gone. So it's not a crazy amount of money. Now, in the e-commerce game, you've obviously got to spend money on ads. You've got to spend money on influencers. You've got to, you know, spend, there's a few outgoings. Now, I really backed myself that much. I got an Amex card where you basically get 30 days payment terms. Now, I would not recommend this to anyone. And if my son came up to me and said, "Dad, you know, this is my plan," I'd be like, "Don't do it." But because I was that desperate to change my life, I was going to be successful in doing it regardless. So yeah, it was basically a case of, I'm going to spend some money on the Amex. I've got 30 days to pay it back and get sales back. And then hopefully at the end of that month, we've made some money, which, you know, we did do. Again, to cut a long story short, that brand did £300,000 in year one from two people that don't know what they're doing with no money, but just with a hunger and a will just to not be defeated. And that's something I'm really proud of, because, you know, how I've got here to this day is by dragging myself here. You know what I mean? No handouts over here. And I'm very proud of that.
So you had the e-com business. You know, it got to a good place pretty quickly. How did you jump from e-com to email marketing? Like, that's, you've not moved to paid media, you know, you've not moved to social ads, you've moved to email marketing. So talk to me how you go from, you know, because most people in that space would go, let's grow this to be a bigger brand, or let's launch another e-com business, or if you want to go agency route, let's launch a paid media agency. How do you go from there to kind of email marketing?
Yeah. So one of how I looked at the e-commerce company was almost like a marketing degree for me, because I was the person building the website, running the ads, doing the email campaigns, running the influencer campaigns. So I was exposed to every aspect of marketing, but doing it for yourself. And when you do something for yourself, you know, you're thinking about these things day and night. So the level of creativity is just different versus if you're doing it for someone else's brand. So what I learned from doing that brand is I really love marketing, and I had such a passion for the marketing side. I hated the product side. Honestly, that was like my work, like those things. Ash worked on those things, but I was like, you know, the person that was really driving the marketing. Now, because of my sales experience, I always knew, and I used to use email in when I was a salesperson. And when I was in the e-commerce game, I wasn't able to put any of my real strengths, which are sales, to the test. And I think if you're a business owner, you should always use the tools that you get given. So, you know, realistically, I shouldn't have been successful in that. It was almost like a bit of a fluke. If I wasn't such a madman to be successful, it probably would have failed. But you know, if, I guess what I'm saying is, if you're a skilled salesperson, maybe don't try and build chairs for a living, because, you know, you're not putting your, you know, you're not putting your tools to its best purpose. So, you know, I eventually sold the e-commerce company. I got made an offer, which was unbelievable, because I've been basically living on an American Express card, and I got made an offer, which was, you know, too hard to refuse. And it gave me now just some breathing space to think, okay, what do you want to do now? You know, financially, you're good. You don't have to worry about paying the bills. You're good. What do you really love? What are you really passionate about? And I'm extremely passionate about sales, about email marketing, about prospecting, and Flowed was born.
So you've sold, you're sat there with Ash, you're like, cool.
Yeah.
How soon after the sale did you start Flowed? Did you go on holiday? Did you have a chill? Did you relax? Or did you literally just go, right, cool, I'm bored again?
Flowed started 3 months before the sale.
Okay, cool.
So when we knew, we was like there was no, like, there was no holiday period, because it wasn't like, you know, realistically, the brand had only been going a year. So, you know, I hadn't put like 10 years into this thing. I was so motivated. Like, I was like, that exit there was basically motivation to basically say, look, Mitch, you're actually good. You know, because at that time, you're still debating. Like, when you're an entrepreneur, you debate, am I actually good or not? You know, do people actually think I'm good? You know, can I actually make money? And that was like that little that was like the little switch which said, go full throttle. You are good. Look what you've just done in 12 months. You know, imagine, you know, with a bit more, like even more effort. Because for the first 6 months of running the econ brand, I was working somewhere else.
Mm.
So imagine what it's like if you're like full time.
Do you know what, you said something really interesting there where it's like self-doubt is huge in entrepreneurship. I think it's hugely, I think it's massively as well. I think that's part of the reason why probably myself and Brad start so many things. It's probably why we've got so many different companies. Because you kind of, the first one, cool, maybe it was fluke.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can do it again.
Mm.
And you do it again, you're like, let's even do it again. Because you know, it's one of those things that's like, you kind of always trying to prove to yourself you've got it in you, even though you've already proven it to yourself once.
Yeah.
And let's be real, starting one company is hard enough, right? Mm. I think anybody who can make a decent business, you know, anyone who's gone from zero to something with not much help has done pretty well for themselves. But to do it again is, you know, you're in the very small percentage at that point.
Yeah. I had so much energy at this point as well. Mm. I was just being fed on life. When I was running the e-commerce company, I was living with my mum as well. So I was living in my mum's spare room just to try and remove as many outgoings as possible. Because, you know, I was that in this. I moved from my city center apartment in Manchester, sold my Mercedes, had no car, and moved back in with my mum. I was like really about this. So,
but you know, like, that's mad because I'm the same, as you know, you spent a few days with me now, yeah. Right? I am the tightest person on the planet, like straight up.
Literally.
Like, you know, if I can go out for a nice meal for 20 quid, like we've got our spot, like yeah. I'm going to spend 20 quid rather than go into somewhere that's really, really fancy. And I think a lot of people expect in entrepreneurship, you've done pretty well, that you're going to start blowing your money in different places. Mm. When it comes to things like eating out and entertainment, I don't want to spend too much because I know how hard it has been to get there.
Yeah.
I know how hard it is to go from there. And you know, you'll see people on very mediocre salaries, leveraged to the hilt, you know, car and finance, a rent they can't afford, or a house with huge mortgage payments. And they're almost setting themselves in a prison.
Yeah.
You know, you've restricted your ability to do anything different. You can't shake your life up. You know, if you've built your life to that level with that salary you've got, you can't do what you did. You can't stop your life. It's already at that level. You have to keep earning that salary. So it restricts your ability to change.
Yeah.
So to get rid of your car, get rid of your flat, to go back to ground zero and start again, you're in a very powerful position because you can't really lose at that point.
Do you know what I would say as well? I remember saying this to Ash. I would rather be working in my mum's spare room than in this city centre apartment because I was much more happier in that spare room, trust me. Because what I was doing, there was a purpose behind it. I wasn't trying to show off to anyone. I was doing it for me. And I say to anyone, you know, and that's where I think if I didn't go through that journey of having a massive ego and being massively humbled, maybe that I wouldn't have been quite okay with that. But because I started life with a huge ego, got humbled, it's massively helped me now. And I'd like to think that I am quite a humble guy now, which I'm quite grateful for.
So early days of Flowed, do you miss them for a start? Do you miss the trenches? Because I remember when me and Brad were in our first office, I mean, it was tiny.
Yeah.
Like it was the size of this carpet. I'm not even joking. And one of the guys who had a little bit bigger agency than us at the time came in and said, remember these days, you'll love them.
Yeah.
And now, you know, everything's bigger. And I always look back with fond memories like that was like the trenches. I mean, it was hard. Don't get me wrong. Like, yeah, you weren't making much money. You were struggling to get by. But the togetherness was huge. You know, everyone got on. It was just a really good vibe. Like, do you miss those times?
Yeah. What I would say is more money, more problems is definitely a real saying. You know, because it almost is that backwards, really. Because when you're at the start, you think, oh, I want more money. I want to run a bigger business. But when you actually do start growing and become a bigger business, you know, your overall, I'm not saying your overall happiness goes down, but, you know, you've just got more things to worry about in a way. But yeah, you know, I remember we had a tiny office in Bolton. There's like two or three of us. And one thing I've always wanted to take care of my people. And even though I had no money, every Friday I'd basically get everyone a takeaway just to like say, guys, you know, thanks for your hard work to it. And I literally was barely even breaking even. But anything that I could do, even if it's just like going getting someone a can of Coke or something, just to show that you care. And to this day now, we do that, but just on a much bigger scale because we can financially afford it. But those are the things that I remember. I remember saying, you know, what do you want from the Bolton kebab shop for lunch?
So talk me through Flowed. Talk me through the, you know, how you created the business, how you've scaled it. You've got obviously offices now in two countries. Yeah. Let's talk that from that start point. What's the journey like and how have you got to where you are?
Yeah. So first of all, we're in quite a niche space. So Flowed is a prospecting service that businesses use to help them go and find more businesses to work with. There's not a huge amount of companies that do what we do. We operate in a niche space and we're very good at what we do. We've built up a really good reputation, which when you're a service-based business like we are, your reputation is really important, as you'll probably know. Now, what's been a key factor for us is our people. My sales ability has massively helped during year one, because if you're running a B2B company and you're the founder, you have to be good at sales, or you have to have someone that's good at sales, because if you're not, you're going to be missing out on so many opportunities of growth. And I remember the first pitch I ever did. So like, you know, the first ever pitch I did, and I basically closed the deal for like £2,000 a month or something. And it was, you know, one of the best feelings ever. Cause before that, when I'd done like B2B sales, it was for other companies. So to do it for yourself, even though it was only a small amount of money, it felt amazing. But I've got this thing about me where I like doing things fast, which is sometimes good and bad. I'm always on the go. I'm always thinking about how can we move forward? How I think my brain just works like that, where it's like, okay, what's next? What's next? So it's like, okay, we've got five people. How can we grow to six people and, you know, do more and do that? So that's kind of been my mentality from start to finish. And I think when I was talking about when I had a job and I only could work on the weekends, that time is so important. And that has stayed with me now. So when I worked a 9-to-5 job, I had 5 hours to work at night. In that 5 hours, I made sure that every minute counted. That's the mentality that I've got now, but I work 60-day weeks, 60, 70-day work, but I work like 60 working hours a week now. But that's the mentality. It's like making every single day count, and I'm annoyed at myself if I finish a day and I haven't done something which has, you know, helped the business move forward. And I think that's one of the reasons why we're here, where we are now.
So you opened you're in Bolton.
Yes.
You were then growing the business. At what point did you decide to open the office in Manchester? And then at what point did you want to open the office in, is it North Macedonia?
Yeah.
So to talk through that.
We actually went a little bit back step. So we actually decided to get rid of any offices and then go fully remote. One of the reasons for this is because we was growing at quite a fast pace, we couldn't quite find the talent that we could afford to pay for in Manchester, because don't forget, we're a startup. We don't have, you know, a lot of money, you know, so we going remote, it allowed us to hire people in London. It allowed us to hire people in so many different areas of the UK and the world. So it just opened up the possibilities for scale so much more. So we went basically remote for like a year. We built the team to maybe like 12, fully remote at this time. And now we're almost like, I'm not gonna say a serious business, but you know, we've got something. We've got a good client base. We've got a team who, you know, are dedicated, who enjoy their work. You know, this is like a real business, you know, that makes millions of pounds. So then we started to think about things, and it was like, I think we're gonna need an office, because even though the remote model worked for us, being fully remote makes life difficult in some situations, i.e. training, i.e. you know, people's fulfillment from work. I'm not, if you've ever tried this, but training remotely is very difficult. You know, and I'm a big believer in a hybrid model is the way to go. I'm not a believer in remote, fully remote work. I don't think it's the way forward. And we've done it, we've lived it. So this isn't something that I just think, oh, that, you know, that's not going to work. We've tried it. So yeah, that was one of the reasons why we decided to get the offices. So yeah, we almost, I'm not going to say took a step backwards by going remote, but you know, we did, if we wasn't remote to start with, it wouldn't have been as easy to get off the ground, because with a service-based business, you need a team to, you know, service clients. And if you can't service clients, you know, you're never going to grow.
I think I remember saying on this podcast that I really did not believe in remote working. And I believe that in the physical office space, the culture, the atmosphere that creates the training, and I'm well on record for saying that. As I've developed more and as I've moved here and traveled around a little bit more, I think you're right. I think the blended approach is the way forward. Because I think if you're in a small city or a small town and you're running a company, for you to believe the best person for that job is within a 10-mile radius.
True.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
There are, 6-7 billion people on this planet, and you believe the best one is a 10-mile radius from your office.
Yeah.
It's not true. It can't be true.
Another thing as well is, why is someone going to go and take a gamble on your 2-person company? Mm. They're just not, because that's such a risk. If I contacted someone from, you know, bigger company in Manchester saying, hey, I want you to come and work for me in my company, I'm going to pay you half of what you're getting now. And it's a much bigger risk than, you know, the company that you're working at now with about 200 people. You're just not going to get very far, are you? So we almost had no options, because we tried to recruit so much locally, but it was just too difficult. And, you know, we had to just look elsewhere, or else we just wouldn't have been able to grow.
So let's go onto the kind of why you're doing what you're doing. So I think every entrepreneur's got their own reason for doing what they do. You obviously got a decent business now. Where's next? What's your end point? What's the vision?
So Flowed is just coming up to 2.5 years old. We do roughly £2 million in annual revenue. The next goal is £4 million. And then the next goal probably after that is £8 million. And the next goal after that is probably £16 million. I think what we've done in such a short period of time, I think, is genuinely quite special. We've had, even though the money that I exited my first company with, I didn't put any of that into Flowed. It was completely bootstrapped. You know, I've never put a penny into Flowed. So that gives me a lot of confidence in, you know, what we're doing. There's a lot of organic requirements and needs for what we do. We don't do any paid advertising. And if you look at the, you know, historically successful businesses, they thrive organically, which is what Flowed do. The next 12 months for us is head down. We've just won a deal with one of the largest companies in the UK, if not the world, which we're extremely proud of and grateful for. I would say that we're punching above our weight at the minute, which we love. We feel like we're in a David and Goliath war with some of the biggest companies in our sector. And we love that. We love that we're the small guys and we've got so much room to grow. We've got such a loyal team also, which I'm also super proud of. I'm really glad that me and Ash have been able to rub off on some of our team and develop them, not just as business people, but develop them as humans. That's another thing which is really important to me. When you are such a people first business like we are, people need to enjoy who they spend time with. And that's another thing which is really important to me. So when we hire, you know, you could be the best person in the room from a skills perspective, but if you're not right culturally, it's just not going to work. And especially when you've got a relatively small team. So we've got a team of 22 at the moment. If there's one person in that room which just is a little bit unaligned, not that they're a bad person, but maybe they just got different interests, different goals, if they will stick out like a sore thumb. So that's up to me to make sure that, you know, we hire people that are aligned. I'm looking forward to it. I've got a big fire in my belly at the moment. I've probably never been as happy than I have at the moment. And I've probably never worked as hard than I am at the moment. But that doesn't mean work's a bad thing. You know, I think work's a good thing, because work has allowed me to change my life, to change my family's life. And hopefully can change some of my staff's life as well.
You mentioned their culture. I think, you know, one of my biggest mistakes I've done kind of developing as an entrepreneur is not getting rid of negative office culture in terms of employees that were creating it, you know, and almost allowing the better employees with the toxicity to remain when they should have gone. Because when what I've noticed kind of when those people are removed, everything just feels better, works better, everyone's happier, but you're kind of blinded by their ability sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's a really, especially when you're like in a startup where, you know, cash is limited, time is limited, you want the best people for the job at the best salary you can get. Your decision-making is blurred because of that person's ability. So I completely agree on that. In terms of, you know, you mentioned that you're obviously working with Ash, you've been through the ups and downs. How is it working with your girlfriend? What's it actually like? Because I genuinely would never do it.
Yeah.
Like straight up, I you know, me and Brad do everything together. You know, he's my right-hand man. But in terms of working with like my girlfriend, it never in a million years am I doing that.
Yeah. Do you know what I would say as well? So me and Ash have got a very unique journey. We basically met when we were in a call center. So we basically met when we was like working in a way. So being together in work is almost everything that we've known in a way. And again, like we're two kids from Preston who come from nothing, you know? So for us, I feel like we're just achieving our life goals together, which is like a beautiful feeling. Now in terms of how does it work, like logistically, like day to days, the first year was very hard. Like, because you don't know which role the next person plays. How it started to get easier when there's definitive roles on what someone does. Now it's almost like you and Brad, you know, it's very clear which roles you play. And if you didn't know, it would be, you know, it'd cause headaches. So we play very different roles. We're extremely different people. I'm like a million miles an hour, not a lot of attention to detail. Tell me where I need to be on what day, when to say, and I'll be there. Whereas Ash is a lot, you know, more slowed down, very attention to detail driven. We'll make sure we're everywhere on time. We'll make sure, you know, everything looks how it needs to be. Two completely different characters. Now, what I would say is our competitive advantage is even on like the weekends when work's ended, we're discussing future plans about how the business can level up. So it almost just doesn't really switch off. Now, again, some people might think that, or, you know, is that enjoyable because you're just talking about work? But we're talking about changing our life and improving our life. So again, like work's not a bad thing. And I did a post on LinkedIn about this a few weeks ago about how we're brainwashed to think work is bad and like life is good. Whereas if you flip it, some people's lives are bad. And when they go to work, that might be like a bit of happiness that they have. So, you know, that's like my mentality. You know, my work and life to me is all rolled into one. You know, I love Monday mornings, probably my favorite day of the week. And I also love the weekends as well. So it's tricky working with your partner, but you know, one thing that I would say is if you are choosing a business partner, the number one trait which you should look for is trust. That is the number one trait that you should look for. And there's one thing about me and Ash, I trust it with my life.
I think you've pretty much said everything there, mate, that needs to be said. But before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to say to the podcast?
No, I think, first of all, thanks for having me on. It was really enjoyable. And I must say, so me and you have been kind of working together for maybe like, you know, on and off for about a year or something like that. I remember the first time that I met you was quite interesting. I've been genuinely inspired by you as well as a person. And I think, you know, I struggle to meet people a similar age to me that I can connect with. There's not a lot of, you know, 28-year-olds running multi-million pound companies. So it's a little bit difficult to find people. And you know, I'm glad that we've kept in contact. And this is what I would say to other people as well. If you are, you know, like us who, you know, there's not a lot of people you can relate to, try and connect with business people, like try and connect with your clients, you know, ask them how their days are rather than just talking about work. And you know, you never know, you might be in Dubai in a podcast studio.
Pleasure, man. Thanks for coming.
No problem. Thank you for having me.